Finance Committee, Tuesday, January 15th. It is a little after 1 p.m. I will just make an announcement. We do want to try and start on time because I want to leave and finish on time. So I will be, for members, please be here at 1 o'clock. And if your bill is first on the list and you're not here at 1 o'clock, you're going to the bottom of the list. So, and I'm sure everybody will be on time as a result of that. It's good to see everyone here. There is no committee change other than one. Ranking member is now Senator Simonson. Senator Marty has moved on to ranking member of Greener Pastures. I think it's Health and Human Services. Greener Pastures or different committee. Just to go over some piece of information, we will not have committee on Thursday. On next week, we will probably start taking up at least an informational hearing on a number of different energy-related topics. I anticipate the following week, which is towards the end of the month, that we would start hearing bills that may be in front of us. I also have a possible committee trip to a field trip. Last session, if you remember, we went to the Metropolitan Waste Disposal Plant in St. Paul out by the river. This one I'm anticipating is to go to an energy-intensive facility. There's a manufacturer that takes automobiles and converts it into rebar, which we use for campaigns. So I thought it was an interesting place to see how energy-intensive some of our industries are and how much the energy costs impact the business community, particular one that is that intensive. So you'll hear more about that as we move forward. Other than that, that's all the announcements and housekeeping items I have for right now. And so with that, we have one bill on the agenda, Senate File 100, and that is mine, Energy Storage System Pilot Projects. And I will turn over the gavel to Senator Simonson to run this bill.
Senator Osmick, welcome to your committee.
Always good to be here.
Right. This is a different perspective for me. I like it. But we are excited about your bill, and I presume you want to make a motion on Senate File 100.
Yes, sir. I would move the A1 amendment to Senate File 100 at this time.
The A1 has been moved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Motion carries. Senator Osmick, to your bill as amended.
Thank you. For members of the committee that were here, and that's all of you from last year, this is the Energy Storage System Pilot Project Authorization Bill from last year. It has broad bipartisan support. Senator Marty is one of the authors on the bill. There really is not probably a lot to go over, and we'll move to the testifiers. This is about an all-of-the-above strategy for energy mix in Minnesota. We do need all of them. We do need coal, we do need natural gas, we do need nuclear, and we do need renewables, and this is all part of that. This gives energy storage the ability to compete in the marketplace when we move forward with our energy future. Energy storage is a emerging technology. As we know, Tesla being one of the major players in the energy storage arena is continuing to move forward with energy storage units, even industrial size units, that can shave the peaks off of our energy usage. For members of the committee, they're probably pretty familiar with the duck curve, where every day our usage peaks at two different times. Energy storage can unlock the potential of a technology revolution that can shave those peaks. And by not having as high a peak demand or being able to use energy storage to remediate that, we can avoid having to build power plants, which for ratepayers, and that's every one of us in the room, that's an important topic. It's important for our not only our residential community, but also our business community. So with that, I'll move to my testifiers. First on the list, don't have it in front of me. Ms. Goldberg, Energy Storage Association. This side.
Ms. Goldberger, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Nitsan Goldberger.
Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chairman Simonson. Chair Osmek, I feel like we've done this before.
Deja vu all over again.
But thank you for the opportunity to come speak in support of this very important bill. I'm very excited to be here in front of you all today. I'll keep my comments brief since this is really a simple and easy bill with a lot of great new policies for energy storage in it. I'm, again, Nitsan Goldberger with the Energy Storage Association. We're the National Trade Association for Energy Storage. We're out of Washington, D.C. We represent 170 members spanning from utilities, developers, manufacturers, independent power producers, and we also represent a wide variety of technologies, including pumped hydro, flywheel, thermal storage, and advanced energy storage, such as lithium-ion batteries. So when I think about the I've said this to this committee before, but I think it's important to underscore the thing that makes energy storage so important, and Chair Osmek has said a lot of this already, but the thing that makes energy storage so important is its ability to capture electricity at one point and use it at a later time when it's most needed. And really, that's an important part for our economic productivity and ratepayer funding savings. Energy storage or electricity is the only commodity, really, that does not have stored inventory. So when you think about oil, gas, water, food, those all have stored capacity and inventory to protect against changes in supply and demand. Up to 10% of daily demand is in stored capacity. And so what we're really looking for energy storage in the electricity sector is to create that kind of stored inventory. It makes us more productive, it makes us safer, it makes us be able to manage not only fluctuations in supply and demand that are daily and usual, but also shocks to the system from natural disasters and otherwise. So energy storage can do a lot by protecting us from needing a lot of spare capacity that the system would otherwise need to be able to buffer against those fluctuations. And that spare capacity and making the system more efficient is really the savings potential and the potential for energy storage in the state of Minnesota. And so really the reason why we're not seeing a lot of energy storage yet is because the rules and regulations that are in place were written at a time for the electric system where energy storage wasn't contemplated. And so the number one task is really to review the rules and regulations and embark on regulatory reform that levels the playing field for energy storage and provides energy storage technologies with the opportunity to compete head-to-head against other resources. And Senate File 100 does just that. It does it by doing a couple of things. Number one, it calls for reform of the integrated resource planning processes to make sure that energy storage is contemplated in an effective way. That doesn't necessarily mean energy storage is selected. It means energy storage is given an opportunity, a fair opportunity, to compete against other resources and win on a cost-effective basis. Senate File 100 also does an important thing by proposing a cost-benefit study. There have been 7 cost-benefit studies already conducted across the United States. These are critical pieces of information for you all as policymakers to be able to evaluate what deployments of energy storage are appropriate and cost-effective for the state of Minnesota, what the regulatory barriers are and market barriers for energy storage in your state, and what policy recommendations that report comes out with can be the starting point for a conversation about what needs to be done on energy storage. So this has been a bill that we worked on very closely with a number of stakeholders and deliberated and discussed and got to language that I think everyone can agree to, and I very much hope that this is a bill that comes back this session and moves forward, and look forward to working with you all. Thank you.
Next is Ms. Soholt, Executive Director of Clean Grid Alliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Simonson, my name is Beth Soholt. I'm with Clean Grid Alliance. You probably know us better as Wind on the Wires. We have been working for 17 years as Wind on the Wires. We rebranded last year because our members, both the nonprofits we work with and the for-profit businesses, who include developers, turbine manufacturers, supply chain companies, others doing business in the renewable energy space, are working on more than just wind. And so as the price of solar energy comes down, as the price of storage comes down and is looked at as a new resource in the mix, our members are working on all of the above. And so we needed a new name. We needed a new umbrella to be able to do our work under. Same philosophy, working with utilities on integrated resource planning, on resource selection that's going to benefit Minnesotans and be reliable and cost-effective and clean over time for ratepayers, but we just needed a new frame to do our work, hence the new name Clean Grid Alliance. So you'll have to say it a few times before it rolls off the tongue, but we go by Clean Grid or CGA, so you'll hear some of all of the above. So wanted to just emphasize the work that we do with developers. So NITSON has laid out kind of the framework for the national picture. We work in the region and then in Minnesota. So we work in 9 states. We do a lot of work with the grid operator, known as MISO, the Mid-Continent Independent System Power Operator. So we work on really understanding how is our energy mix changing. We work with utilities who want to procure resources. Our members are offering them products and services through renewables or now through storage. They are partners with the utilities in either providing resources through power purchase agreements or sometimes selling projects to the utilities who will then own those projects, those wind, solar, or storage projects. So that's how we fit into the picture. We've had a 17-year track record of working very collaboratively with the utilities and other stakeholders, state regulators, grid operators, folks who use a lot of energy. So we are in the weeds. We know a lot of the wonky stuff, but I'm going to keep it kind of high level today and talk about why this is such an important bill to move forward this session. So my second slide really just illustrates, it's a little chart, and I have to thank a presentation that I pulled this from Xcel Energy, and it's entitled Why Energy Storage? And I just wanted to remind the committee that energy storage can be and can do many things. And so you will hear folks talk about energy storage behind the meter on a customer site, and you will hear it talked about in front of the meter or connected to more of the bulk grid. And so you can see that it spans a wide range of potential. It can be deployed in different parts of the grid and provide value for ratepayers at different parts of the energy chain. And so there's a lot that can be unpacked in this chart, but I'm not going to go there. I would be glad to with my team, come in and answer more questions or go more in depth on anything that you're interested in. But let me just move to my third slide for purposes of right now. So I wanted to set a little bit of context for drivers. What's going on in Minnesota? Why are we so interested in looking at storage at this point in our energy mix, in our energy system? A lot of things are changing in energy. I'm sure this committee, these committee members have read in the media or in had briefings on how the cost of various new technologies have really come down. Wind and solar are becoming cost competitive. The cost curve for storage is really diminishing. And so that provides a new opportunity. Utilities are looking at when we need resources in the 2020s or in the 2030 timeframe, or when we're doing unique behind-the-meter things today, what value can we get from storage? Storage by itself has value, but it also has a lot of value to combine with other resources. So from Clean Grid Alliance's perspective, we want to see the utilities do job one, which is planning. What's the role of storage that can provide value to Minnesotans over the long term? What piece of the puzzle should it serve? So the planning piece for the integrated resource planning for utilities to really do a good job on that is a key piece for us. Another big driver right now is utility customers are really asking for more more and more electricity to be generated by reliable, affordable, renewable energy. So you have corporate purchasers who have renewable energy goals or sustainability goals. You have so you have more folks asking utilities for clean energy. And you can pair storage and renewables in a lot of cases very, very cost effectively. And so that's a big driver is utility customers asking for the product. Another one is to really look at savings that storage can provide. Conexus recently put online a solar storage project that they're using to be cost effective around a demand charge. And so utilities are constantly looking at what piece of savings can storage provide in the picture. So those are just three big picture kind of drivers for storage right now. Other things that are happening in Minnesota and the Midwest, as Nitzan said, there's a lot of work going on to understand and to reformulate or in some cases create new rules and regulations. One of the big ones is around a federal energy regulatory order, known as Order 841. This is creating a big possibility at the regional level for storage to play in the wholesale energy market. And our utilities and others are looking at the possibilities that that's going to create. And then finally, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has been doing a lot of work on grid modernization and on updating interconnection standards that would apply to storage and that would allow storage and other distributed resources to interconnect to the grid and be safe and reliable. So lots of work going on, and I will just leave it a really high level there, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Stolt. Is there any questions from committee members for either of these two testifiers? You must have done a great job. Thank you. Senator Osmick, you have a couple of more testifiers, it looks like.
Yes, we have Lynn Hinkle and Rick Evans. First
Good
would
afternoon.
Be Mr. Hinkle.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hinkle. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself and go ahead and proceed.
Chair Simonson, Energy Committee and the Senate. My name is Lynn Hinkle. I'm the policy specialist representing IPS Solar. We're a 25-year-old or year young company that's been doing primarily solar, as our name implies, and we're here to give full-throated support for this bill. We've been involved with stakeholders last session in helping to craft what we thought was a very strong and important statute. And for no fault of Chair Osmick or the bill's language, it didn't get into law. And we're really grateful that it's being resurfaced this session. Thank you, Chair Osmick, for bringing it back up. So that it hopefully can be put on the governor's desk in a very short period of time. IPS Solar, as I indicated, has done primarily work in deploying solar in Minnesota. We're doing work in other states at this point, but Minnesota remains our home base and the place where we intend to develop projects that are not just solar, but integrating energy storage with solar. We have a division in our company called Distributed Energy Resource Group that's engaging different entities around the state in developing projects that integrate PV and storage. This bill is technology agnostic, however. It's not promoting PV. It's not promoting any particular technology. In fact, part of the beauty of this, if you hold the frame back a little bit, is that it finally crosses that threshold, that it answers that question, how are you going to deal with the intermittency, the variability of solar? How are you going to deal with the intermittency, the variability of wind? How are you going to deal with these difficult and variable elements in the provision of energy with renewables? This is the answer. So it's a huge step forward. I think from our standpoint, we're most enthusiastic about the Section 4, which is the cost-benefit analysis of energy storage systems. This isn't going to directly impact our business. What it will do, however, is create what we think is a very positive climate for the discussion about the cost and benefits of energy storage. As was stated by a previous testifier, we wouldn't be the first state doing this. However, it has to be done on a state-by-state basis. We have to look at the cost and benefits based on the particularities of our utilities in this state, our weather, a number of other variables. This is going to create an opportunity for us to assess how to move forward and develop potentially other ways to help incentivize storage in the state, which this bill currently does not. I'd like to conclude by stating that we're really excited about what we think is a huge bipartisan opportunity to have a victory for the clean energy economy, and we would urge your full support for this legislation, and look forward to working with the committee and going forward in the future as we spin off of some of the elements in this legislation that are foundational. With that, I'll conclude, and happy to answer any questions that you all would have about distributed energy resources, how solar and storage work together. Any question that you might have?
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle. I don't see any questions right at the moment. Mr. Evans? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Osmick and Mr. Hinkle, I guess in Section 4, there's non-permissive language. You start off with a must contract, and then you go to a may also include, and then we go back in the study must. And so I guess the question is there a reason why we went from non-permissive to permissive language regarding who the different scenarios could be or possibly be, or am I just reading too much into that?
Mr. Hinkle.
Chair Simonson, Senator Hoffman, I think what we're most impressed by in this section of the bill is that it's developing an analysis of the multiple use cases. We're looking at the different ways that storage could be used in a number of different situations. At this point, I don't believe that there's a great deal of significance in the must versus may. My impression is that it was trying to create a large scope for the discussion and incorporate or be inclusive of the full set of use cases that should be looked at for a cost-benefit analysis.
Senator Osmick, you want to follow up?
Yeah. The mays and the musts in here, I think they're, because some sections we wanted to be a little bit more prescriptive than others, that the study must, so that we have identification of individual components that we as a legislature believe should be in there. If we made it all mays, I get concerned what's going to happen on the back end of the study, that we may not get everything we're looking for. Hence, there's a must. There was musts in some places and mays in the other.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Osmond, because I wonder if that second, especially that second section where the study may also include scenarios examining energy storage systems that are not capable of being controlled by a utility. Would that not, you want to dangle the carrot before the, to get other players, and since you want to be inclusive in this, wouldn't it make more sense to say that must include scenarios? That way you're not saying, we're not going to think about the widget corporation over there or not. And if you think that it captures everything that you want to get, then I guess I'm okay with that. I just, anytime I see permissive, non-permissive, it causes me to put up a flag. That's all.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hoffman. I think I like the word may in there because we may not necessarily have something that meets necessarily that criteria. If you put in the word must, then there has to be a system not controlled by a utility available to meet that demand of the legislation. So I think it, it gives a little bit more flexibility. And our next testifier may actually have something. It could actually enlighten that section. Oh, he's not. So I'll stick with what I said. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Evans, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Most of what I say here today, I think you can take as being from collectively from all the utilities. If behind me they spring out of their chair at something, I guess you'll have to have them come up and make an exception. But we decided we didn't need six or eight of us coming up here to speak to you. So I want to thank Senator Osmick for bringing this bill back from last year. This bill is a result of many hours of negotiation and discussion between all of the utilities and the stakeholders on this topic, and we were pleased with the bill that provision that came out last year and are happy to see that it's being revived. The utilities have long recognized the value of energy storage, the potential value for energy storage on our systems. And so in a way, we see this as really the state of Minnesota stepping up from a policy perspective and joining the things that the utilities have already been doing for quite some time. I was just thinking earlier today, it was over 10 years ago that your former colleague, Senator Jim Vickerman, and I went out on a freezing cold day to a farm in the middle of Laverne, Minnesota, to see a large battery that we had spent $1 million on. That was a big number back then. To be installed next to a wind farm that we were producing the energy from so that we could start studying the integration of energy storage with the wind farm. That was over 10 years ago. In the meantime, we also attempted to have a pilot project down in Belle Plaine, Minnesota. The PUC raised some concerns about the cost-benefit of that program, and so it's still being worked on, but I can say that Xcel Energy out in Colorado has three battery projects, a 50 megawatt, a 125 megawatt, and a 100 megawatt battery project in Colorado that's being used. As we start to study how the integration of these resources will work, what the opportunities are, what the constraints are, what the costs and benefits will be as we use these. So we're especially happy to have this language in this bill which recognizes the value of these pilot programs, which we've been undertaking in our service territory, and I know the other utilities have been undertaking, so that the PUC gets the direction from the legislature that pilot programs in the area of energy storage is a valuable tool, and we're looking forward to continuing to work on those. We also very much appreciate the study that's contained in this bill. There have been studies before. I think others have made reference to them. The Department of Commerce recently completed a study with Department of Energy funding. The McKnight Foundation has recently completed a study. And as you know, I think it was made reference to, MISO is starting to complete a study as they start looking at how what the rules of the game will be as we integrate these resources onto the grid. So those are all very important in this. And well, let me mention one other, and this one is critically important at Xcel Energy, and that's our resource plan. As you may know, we will file a resource plan in July. It was scheduled to be filed in February. We sought an extension as we got some additional information. But I can assure you that our resource planners are very busy looking at the potential for energy storage as a part of our resource plan. You may recall that a resource plan is a 15-year future or outlook, forward look. So we're not just looking at the technology that's available today, we're also looking at the technology that we think will become available and will become cost effective over the next 15 years. That's an extremely extensive study, if you will, on our system. And we think that the study that's contained in this bill will help all of the utilities, as well as MISO, as well as Xcel Energy, to further work to integrate this extremely this valuable potential into our system over the coming years. So we think this is a terrific bill that moves this concept forward. We've been working on it for a number of years. We want to continue to work on it. We think this bill is critical to that. I will raise one caution, and I didn't mention this to Senator Osmick beforehand, but I know he's very much aware of it, so I don't need to caution him. But this study is funded out of the Renewable Development Fund. The Renewable Development Fund I assure you, is a finite resource, and I suspect before this session is over, you're going to see a lot of bills using money out of the Renewable Development Fund. So I just, on behalf of Xcel and its ratepayers who pay into the fund, I'll warn you, and I know Senator Osmak doesn't need this warning. He's very much aware of it. Be cautious about using the RDA because there's just only, this is a fairly small appropriation out of it, but there is a limit to how much money is in there. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, except for the one that was asked earlier, which I don't think I can answer. But
thank you, Mr. Evans. Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, I just had a quick question because when I go through all this, the only thing I don't see is anything about mission times. And one thing I would kind of like to see in the study or cost-benefit analysis, regardless of who does it and if anybody else from the other testifiers, is what is the mission time? So, for example, you have an anomaly on the grid or a storm, and you know, how long would a certain installation be required to provide the power until the utility could get main power back online? That's only one area. That's one area where I'd like to see some discussion on that. And secondly, because I went out to Colorado to visit my son over the holidays, you know, when you drive out of Denver International Airport, you see the Panasonic project that's out there. And I was just curious if Xcel has any runtime data that would be beneficial to this study and analysis that you know, would help speed things up a little bit, and we'd have some actual real-time data to go by, and I think that might be some help as well.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know the answer to that last question, but I will see what I can find out. I would hope that whoever's commissioned to do the study that is called for in this bill would avail themselves of a lot of resources, and we certainly would make all of ours available to them to assist them in doing the study. I think on your first question, the best I can tell you is that when one studies cost and benefit, one of the benefits, of course, would be limited by how able the storage is to respond to certain events and what the timing would be and all of that. So I think, I guess I would assume that, you know, that even without saying it directly, that would be part of the benefit that would be evaluated as one looks at energy storage as a potential resource. I wish I could remember, and I don't. The battery that we installed down in Luverne either had an output of 7 megawatts for 9 hours or 9 megawatts for 7 hours. I can't remember which one it was. But anyway, those were the parameters of that battery. And so as we studied that in conjunction with the wind farm, of course, you needed to keep in mind that the battery, when fully charged, was only going to put out so much energy and only for so long a period of time. And so I assume that's all part of the cost-benefit analysis that would be done in the kind of study that's contemplated here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hinkle has something to add to that.
Mr. Hinkle?
In regards to the pilots that are undertaken by Xcel in Denver right now, we've been in conversations with those folks from Xcel who were responsible for initiating the project and have their engineers in the process of evaluating the opportunities. There are two basic pilots that have been undertaken. One is a large collaboration with Panasonic, and that has a two-and-a-half-year period for examination and evaluation. And Xcel, as we understand it, is already 1 year and some months into the operation, so they've begun the process of looking at the data to determine how much, because they're doing both things that Beth talked about earlier. There's an opportunity to look at behind-the-meter opportunities and benefits, and they're also looking at the benefits in front of the meter. So it's a complex study, and a lot of data is coming in. There's also another residential piece that's being conducted in the Stapleton area. So there are two levels, and I think it's going to provide us with a lot of data and information going forward. IPS Solar actually is in a discussion tomorrow with some of the folks that are engaged in that pilot, and we'll be finding out more out of that discussion. We expect that we're going to hear some good things and that can be folded into this study that we're talking about.
Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with the Stapleton, that's the Stapleton redevelopment area out there, and that's, is that the one where they have, like, the battery installations on the homes? Is that what
well,
that is?
There are multiple Mr. homes. Engel. What I'm sorry, Chair Simonson, Senator Goggin. Well, the reason they chose that neighborhood is that, unlike a number of places in their service territory in Colorado or perhaps even in Minnesota, there's a relatively high penetration of solar. So they wanted to look at how does storage work with PV solar in a number of different blocks. It's not just one set of, it's several residential neighborhoods in the Stapleton development where they're using relatively small amounts of storage that complement the PV solar. So they're looking at a couple of different use cases, kind of getting back to what we were talking about before with why are we looking at all these different categories in the assessment. This will give us data for a couple of different use cases.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hinkle. Senator Osmick, I don't see any other names on your list, but is there?
I put the invite out to see if there's anybody in the room that hasn't that would like to speak on it. Otherwise, we'll wrap up.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify either in favor or against this bill? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Osmick, thank you for bringing this forward once again. It's a great bill, a great start. I just have a couple of questions. They're not terribly, I don't necessarily think, meaningful to the bill, but perhaps on line 213 where it talks about defining utility, and again, I just sort of wonder about that. In my area of the state, a lot of the cooperatives are get their power from Dairyland in Genoa, Wisconsin. Would the fact that they're in Wisconsin, at least corporately, preclude them, even though they serve probably that amount of power and customers in Minnesota?
Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I believe it would because when you look at the entire Section B, it identifies that it needs to be customers in Minnesota. I guess I'd ask counsel that.
And Senator Osmond, this is just an open question. We can,
right.
If it's important, we can work on it later.
I guess I'd ask counsel that it actually says retail customers in Minnesota, but as we know, companies go across jurisdictional lines. I think it would be more to that they have to be capable of generating 100,000 kilowatts or more, so that may preclude certain entities from being involved. But we can ask counsel. I don't know if you have an answer to that or we can check on it. Ms. Fontaine?
Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Senjum, the energy storage pilot projects would only apply to public utilities, first of all, so not just any utility like a cooperative or
muni. Would not
muni.
Apply anyway. Okay.
For the pilot projects and for them to be able to commission or to petition the PUC, that would only apply to public utilities, so
okay.
Xcel, Minnesota Power, et cetera.
Thank you very much. Senator Osmick,
Senator
two more,
Senator.
Actually, and minor. Going down to line 223, where you list the renewable energy resources. In Minnesota, municipal solid waste is in statute a renewable energy resource. Should that be on there?
Senator Osmick.
And it's an open question. We can deal with it
later. Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I guess that would be another question we can ask as a follow-up.
Sure.
It does identify landfill gas, which would be methane, so I think that accomplishes what you're looking for. We can certainly check into that for you.
Senator Osmick, I'm talking about the burning of waste.
I'm sorry.
Municipal solid waste.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, you're talking like the trash burner next to Target Stadium.
We have one in Rochester and so
right.
on.
Right. We could look into that. There may be some additional language we can amend. This has to go to finance,
sure.
So Senator Rosen gets a crack at this before it goes to the floor.
And Senator Osmick, if you would,
Senator,
on to line 3-6, would pumped hydro fall into the mechanical process or should that be separate?
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Senjum, I think mechanical covers that. I will check with council, because in order to create a pumped hydro, which in Minnesota is probably a little problematic because we don't have a lot of altitude changes like they do in Colorado, I believe mechanical would encompass that, because you have to pump physically the water up, and that would take a mechanical substance to make it happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Osmond, for bringing this forward. Nice bill.
Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Osmond, for bringing this again to the table. This is a good discussion, and I think the question I was going to ask, I answered it. I think that it's just a one-time appropriation of $150,000. Is that correct?
Senator Osmond.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hoffman, it is from the Renewable Development Account for fiscal year 2020 only, as defined in Section 5. That was something I was going to be closing with, is that this is an appropriation. It does have to go to finance. It is a one-time gig deal. However, at some point in time, if we continue down this path of storage, we may see another tap to this, but that would be another legislative action.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, and thank you for that clarification, Mr. Osmond. Senator Osmond, I do appreciate the renewable development folks, but the RDA is that piece that we have as an Excel rate payer. That RDA, you know, covers the Excel stream, and this is now something that we're going to go statewide, which is good, but I like the caution that Mr. Evans is putting in, that, you know, that we got to be very careful about how we do it. Maybe we look for some other ways to make this sustainable as it grows forward. And I know Northwest Energy out in New Richland, Washington, is really looking at the energy stuff. And the energy storage that Xcel is doing is beyond things that I've seen just locally, too. I know Conexus is doing a 600 kilowatt, but nothing like what you guys are doing, Mr. Evans. But I just wanted to make sure that caution is also there with us as well. But thank you again for doing this bill.
I don't see any other questions, Senator, if you want to wrap up with final comments.
Thank you. Appreciate the time. We've had an excellent discussion. Who says that I can't bring a bipartisan bill to the Senate floor? And I'm sort of hoping that we can make this happen. This will be going to finance, and I hope it does ride as an individual bill. It got caught up in the garbage can that got hit, you know, got hit with a veto, and I don't want that to happen. I think Senate leadership has very clearly defined that they want to get things done. And I think we as a Senate should get things done, and rather than dumping it into an omnibus bill. With that, I'd also like to recognize former Representative John Burns, who was instrumental in putting this together. He worked with many different players. I know he's behind me waving his hands frantically, but he should be recognized for the hard work that he did in making sure that this did come in with all sides, both the utilities as well as proponents of renewable energy, coming together and recognizing that this is something that makes sense to be paid for out of the renewable development account. With that, members, I will move Senate File 100 as amended, be recommended to approve this be approved by this body and sent to full finance.
Members, you've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Okay, members, coming back to just sort of wrapping up, we do have a bill. If you remember the Benson Biomass Fund that we worked on last year, that has been submitted. I do anticipate that coming up next week. The intent will be to hear the bill and lay it over, because there are two additional bills that are going to be coming that need to be running all together in one. It is the Prairie Island money, if you remember the zero emissions money for Prairie Island Tribe, as well as the cap on the casks. So that the intent is pull those together and work them together. Senator Dibble last year, if I remember correctly, had an amendment to the energy omnibus bill for schools to have a certain amount of money out of the RDA. I think it was $2 million. I hope you will put that in bill form so that we can hear it. And if anyone else has any questions or concerns, Seeing none, this committee is adjourned.